Chapter 26. For Old Times. Brannis and one of the palace porters clattered down the halls of the palace, intent on the stables. Their arms were filled with the provisions Brannis had expected they might need on the journey to Rainsdark. While Brannis carried the pack with the books he had taken from the tower library, a number of maps of the countryside, and a few changes of clothing, the porter was carrying much of Brannis's armor, whence came much of the considerable noise they were making. Brannis wore a traveling cloak over mail armor and a steel breastplate, as well as his Solaran tabard. Mail covered the leather of his leggings down to just above the knee, but his lower legs and boots were unarmored. It was a compromise, armor that would lend some protection if they ran into trouble on their journey, but not so heavy that a journey of a 10-day would wear him down physically. He expected to ride hard, at least so much as his sorcerer companions could handle. Brannis was under little illusion about his companions. Sorcerers among the Kadrin Imperial Circle were not known for partaking of an active lifestyle. Iridan's adventure in Kelvi Forest with Brannis had been by far the exception, and even after the whole expedition, he was hardly in the shape of a common conscript. Juliana, for all else he admired about her form, was built better for the ballroom than the road, with thin arms and slender legs and shallow, graceful... Never mind that now. The other two he knew not, but neither looked the least bit rugged. Ruglor likely weighed twice his own 25 gallons. Well, probably not, but it certainly seemed like it. And Phelan must have spent as much time on his appearance as a courtesan, and appeared more dainty than even Juliana, who could at least act the part of the fierce warrior when the mood struck her. And yet, should we be ambushed on the road, it will be them protecting me, not the other way around, Brannis thought ruefully. He knew he was being sent to Rainsdark for his leadership, rather than his sword arm. But it was still a bit off-putting to know that any of the four of them could almost literally tie him into knots if it came right down to it. Kadrin sorcerers were a far cry from the novices the goblins in Kelvi had thrown at them. When Brannis and his assistant made it to the stables, they found Rashaan waiting for them. Unlike the previous night's dinner, they had arrived in advance of the rest of the attendees. The warlock was dressed in his usual black robes and cloak, but he was carrying an ornate breastplate. "Fair morning, Brannis," Rashaan greeted him. "I ought to have sent word to leave your armor behind, but I've had so many other tasks to attend to that I fear I overlooked that detail. Now, before everyone else arrives, get that stuff off and get changed." "What do you mean? I have no time for fitting a new set of armor at this point. If you need my measurements to have it fitted while I'm away, I use Golaway as my smith. He's the best in Kadrin these days and has all my measurements, unless I've lost girth with how busy I have kept myself this last season or so." You did not already have Golaway alter that armor for me, did you? I cannot imagine that was made anew in the 2 days since you have returned." "No, Brannis, do not concern yourself. It will fit you plenty well enough without alteration. Quit arguing and just put it on. You shall see," Rashaan said, proffering the breastplate at arm's length. Brannis looked about and saw what appeared to be the rest of the matching plates hanging from pegs that normally would have held riding tack, had 5 horses not already been outfitted that morning. "Very well," Brannis agreed, reluctantly. He hoped that the warlock was at least a good enough judge of his size that the armor would not be too uncomfortable. Given the choice of looking like a grand marshal and actually wearing comfortable fitted armor, he would choose the latter every time. For someone unaccustomed to needing armor, Rashaan just would not understand the vast difference between close and just right when it came to the fit of a suit of armor. Golaway made a princely living for a commoner by being a master at understanding that difference. He enlisted the porter's help in getting out of his own armor, a task he could manage on his own if time was not an issue. When he went to put on the long-sleeved mail shirt that went on under the plates of the new armor, He found it to be laughably oversized for him. Brannis found that unusual, as he was among the tallest knights in the empire, and his hands would not even exit the ends of the sleeves until he bunched up the mail at his wrists. As soon as Brannis had fully donned the mail shirt, it began to shrink until it fit snugly against the padded woolen underlayer he wore. His eyes immediately sought out the warlock and found Roshan watching him with amusement. "I told you it would fit," the warlock said, smiling. "Where did you get this? I doubt even five knights in the Empire own ether-forged armor. I dare say none would give theirs up while they yet lived," Brannis replied. Brannis's own armor was runed, but not ether-forged. It held protections that a sorcerer could renew with ether, but ether-forged armor was not only stronger, but also capable of remarkable feats, like the resizing trick Roshan's proffered armor had just performed. "Please tell me that you did not murder some poor knight to get this." "No, I merely made a search of the Emperor's private armory. It was hanging on a display rack, apparently unused since Liad wore it into battle with me," Roshan said, sounding sad. "So you made this armor?" Brannis asked, impressed. As he looked over the rest of the plates, he could not help admiring the exquisite detail, etched patterns and writings that were hidden among the raised relief artwork, gracefully flowing lines, and on the inside, runes. "No, no. Sadly, I cannot take credit for that. It was hundreds of summers old when I first laid eyes on it. I never took the time to research its history, but many an emperor, those that were of a mind at least, wore it when going to battle or when fighting in tournaments. Once long ago, our emperors were not craven canaries, kept in gilded cages to be put on display for the commoners at holidays." "If this is from the emperor's armory, I should not be wearing it. This should only be worn by the emperor." Brannis began removing the mail shirt. "Stop that. Be sensible. You talk as if there were an emperor to offend. My all-wise inner circle saw to it that the canary in the cage was replaced with the mere reflection of a bird. It did all it needed to on high balconies on feasting days, but I think it lacked the ability to take offense. While I am regent, I will not allow such useful magic to go wasting away in a dusty room while I can put it to use in battle," Roshan said. "Well then," Brannis trailed off, and he started putting the armor on. The porter loitered around to help, but the armor went on with ease as each piece was comfortably oversized as it went on, and then fitted itself like a second skin as soon as it was in place. When he had finished, Roshan conjured up a shimmering force in midair that reflected like a mirror. "Well, see how you look. More befitting the Grand Marshal of the Imperial Army, would you say?"
"I must admit, I look the part now, at least," Brannis said.
He was dressed head to foot in gold and quicksilver, materials that would never be used in more functional, mundane armor. Quicksilver could not even have held a shape without magic. But as mere vessels for the magic they bore, they were impressive and far more functional than any armor Brannis had ever worn. "Here is the best part," Roshan told Brannis. Without warning, the warlock drew Heaven's Cry and lunged for him. Brannis could barely begin to lift his arm to ward off the unexpected attack before the blade struck him squarely in the chest. Brannis rocked back slightly under the blow, but instinctively, he had expected the blade to pass right through him. More rationally, he had figured that the ether construct worked into the armor would have held firm, and he would have just been driven back by the force of the blow. But that had not happened either. He looked down at the breastplate and noticed a small dent that was already growing smaller as the quicksilver flowed back into a mirror-smooth, perfectly unblemished surface.
"I admit it, that was impressive."
Brannis smiled and went back to looking over his reflection. There were dragon claw clasps at the collarbone for attaching a cloak, and the ridged blades rode down each arm from elbow to wrist.
Similar blades worked their way down from knee to ankle. The boots were made with a thick sole to them, making Brannis seem a half hand taller even, on top of his already impressive stature. The gauntlets were serrated on the backs of the knuckles, but the palm side was just leather, which gave them a comfortable feel on the hilt of his blade. And there was a hook on his belt to hang them from when he was attending to less bloody work. The helm was a masterpiece, shaped into the countenance of a demon, the storybook sort, not like Rashaan at all, with twisting horns and jutting edges and angles around the open face that seemed to cast the wearer's face in ominous shadows and less lit from directly in front. Rashaan handed Brannis a new cloak as well, blood red to match the trim of the inner circle's robes, as well as the Emperor's personal colors. "There's nothing special about the cloak," Rashaan said. "It is just well made and matches the armor better than the plain one you wore back from Kelvi." As Brannis was fastening it on, the rest of the group arrived, apparently all having just come from the dining hall's morning feast. Brannis, being of a more martial and practical bent, had expected them to break their fast on the road with trail rations. But it appeared as if he had been overruled by the majority. "Excuse me, Warlock? What have you done with Brannis? And who is this scary-looking fellow in the sharpened armor?" Iridan asked upon seeing Brannis in Emperor Liad's armor. Iridan was dressed like Rashaan again, in his black tunic and leggings, and steel-epauletted cloak. Brannis supposed it would serve well enough as traveling attire, if Iridan had some magic in mind to deal with the cold. The other three were dressed more reasonably for the late autumn trek to the mountains. The robes of the Imperial Circle had been replaced with riding leathers and heavy jackets and cloaks. Brannis had to make a point of not letting his gaze linger over long on Juliana, as he reminisced about the last time he had seen her dressed for riding. "I hear he's the new Grand Marshal," Juliana said. "He must be trying to look the part. I would have suggested a few gray hairs and some wrinkles myself." She looked Brannis over with much less discretion than he had used, making him a bit uncomfortable with everyone else there watching. "Now that we're all here," Rashaan began, ignoring the jests, "I will reveal the surprises I have in store for you." "I hope he does not have one of those outfits for me," Iridan muttered to Ruglor, whom he seemed to already know. "I have 5 horses here, all fitted with runed shoes." The 5 would-be travelers looked at each other, puzzled. None of them had been expecting horses with runed shoes. "They've been fully drained for now, but when charged with ether, these horses will run easily twice their normal speed, and their hooves will not quite touch the ground. That will allow you to cross rough, muddy terrain as well as bodies of water. Take care not to stop on the water, as the effect does not persist once they stop moving." "That could save 6 or 7 days off of our journey," Brannis said, impressed. He could not predict how long the goblins would spend consolidating their hold on Illard's Glen before advancing to Rainsdark, if they had not already done so. 6 days would markedly increase their chances of reaching the city ahead of that anticipated siege. "No, it will save 3 days, 4 if you press," Rashaan said. "Besides allowing you to move faster, the shoes will let you take uncut paths through the mountains. You will not have to take High Pass and follow the cloud wall south along the western side. You can head straight west and come at the city from across the mountains directly."
"How will we know where to cross the cloud wall if there is no road?" Ruglor asked.
"You are smart little boys and girls, and Brannis is carrying maps. I'm sure you will figure out how to find Rainsdark from the east side," Rashaan replied. "Now mount up and be gone. You have already wasted enough of the morning. Head north along the road for an hour, then activate the horseshoes and begin heading west from there. That should confuse any spies who might take note of your departure. So long as you have privacy when you veer west, you will not be seen again by any who might try to follow you. Oh, and I can trust that the 4 of you will support Brannis's claim that he has truly been appointed Grand Marshal. I want no trouble from Duke Peloton, if he is indeed as cantankerous as Duke Benclear inferred. Brannis is to take charge of all Kadrin forces present, including Duke Peloton's own troops. And that includes the lot of you and any sorcerers in the city already, Rishan said.
But Warlock, the chains of command are entirely separate. I would have to support the senior, in this case, only member of the inner circle present, were there to be a conflict, Phelan said, possibly mistaking Brannis's and Iridan's informality with the Warlock for permission to act so himself.
Let me make this clear, Sorcerer Phelan. Marshal Brannis is in charge on this journey, and he's in charge when you all reach Rainsdark. I say so, and I am High Sorcerer, as well as Regent of the Empire. I am explicitly ordering you to follow Marshal Brannis's command. Is that clear? Rishan asked, glaring at Phelan. They all selected mounts and stowed their gear in the saddlebags. Brannis's load was much lighter now that he was not bringing separate armor for travel and battle. The magical armor was more comfortable even than his own expertly fitted armor, and lighter as well.
Iridan, Rishan spoke softly, pulling his son aside as the others were busying themselves with the horses. Take this.
And he pressed a plum-sized spherical stone into Iridan's hand. It was carved with hastily scratched runes and had a hole in the middle, through which a leather thong was run. It is a crude speaking stone I crafted last night. It will only send to me and may not work for long, but should anything go badly, contact me. I can use a transference spell to come to your aid. I have much to attend to here in Kadrus, so do not bother me for trivialities.
How bad should I allow things to get before seeking aid? Iridan asked.
Ah, now that is my son talking. Assume the worst when making your plans, and nothing can take you unawares. Well, I would expect the goblins to have some nasty surprise for you. If it looks as if you cannot counter what that turns out to be, I would think that qualifies, Rishan said.
Any ideas what that surprise might be? Iridan asked.
No, that is Brannis's job. He is the mind of the army now. If I did not think he was up to puzzling it out, I would have to go myself and risk whatever chaos I might find upon returning to Kadrus. Ruling an empire is a game more complex than chess, and you do not see all the pieces I have to keep track of.
I have known Brannis most of my life. If anyone can figure it out, he can. I cannot imagine where he thinks of some of the gambits he tries, but it always seems he's one step ahead, Iridan said.
He had always been proud to call Brannis a friend. Even when it became clear that Iridan would become the more powerful sorcerer, he leaned on Brannis to get him through the harder classes at the academy. Rishan just nodded and moved to pull Brannis aside before they left.
I'm putting a great deal of trust in you, Brannis. You heard me stake quite a claim against my reputation last night, supporting your takeover of the army. Make good use of it. Get those goblins out of my empire by whatever means you must use. Just be warned, those green-skinned devils are smarter than most men. Whatever they have planned, you must counter it, for they must be counting on the advantage they gain from it to succeed.
The report said that the goblins have some new siege weapon that obliterated the walls of Illard's Glen, Brannis said.
Yes, and?
Rishan sensed Brannis was onto something. I am rather certain that they now have cannons, Brannis said. He waited for a reaction from Rishan. It was a gambit that he was not sure of, but if it went poorly, he would just muddle his way out of it somehow. Rishan's face remained a mask. The normally talkative warlock said nothing for a moment, but studied Brannis.
I see, was all he could say to Brannis's statement. And from the way he said it, Brannis was not at all certain just what he meant that he saw.
The first leg of their journey, still following the north road out of Kadrus, was somber and brisk. A light snowfall had begun overnight, and a thin dusting blanketed the countryside. As far south as the capital of the empire was, it was unusual to receive the season's first snow so late into autumn. The solstice would be in just 14 days. As they were to be heading north and west, they could expect to see less of the wintry weather until they crossed the mountains. The cloud wall would shield the eastern slopes from most precipitation, but the western side, at higher elevations, would likely have already seen heavy snows. Brannis called them to a halt when they found a respite from the curious eyes sharing the road with them. They had just crested a hill in a lightly forested area on the outskirts of Potaway Wood, which the road veered northwesterly to avoid entering. Potaway Wood was on House Archon land, and the road had been blazed in ages long past, during a time when the Emperor and the head of the Archon clan were not seeing things with the same temper. The wood was a prime hunting ground for elk and caribou, as well as the much rarer mammoth foxes. It was vast and deep and dark, and even experienced hunters only ventured so far within its grasp before turning back. The forest spirits had been driven out of it during the wars that resulted in the Empire's founding, but it was commonly believed that some remained hidden away, deep within, and were responsible for the disappearances of many a brave huntsman. Brannis used the tree cover to obscure them from those to their north, while the bulk of the hill they had crested shielded them from view to the south. "I think we've found our opportunity to throw off any curious pursuers. Time for us to take our leave of the road," Brannis called out to his companions. As Juliana and Ruglor, who had been leftmost in the formation, brought their mounts about, Brannis held up a warding hand. "Wait, we need to have those horseshoes filled with ether. Roshan said that the horses' hooves would not be touching the ground once they gained speed. And if we are careful, we may leave no clue as to where we left the road." "Ruglor, Phelan, see to it," Iridan commanded, sitting back in his saddle with a little smile. He cast a sidelong glance at Juliana to see if she showed any sign of appreciating not having been assigned to work on the horse's shoes. The two appointed sorcerers exchanged a knowing look as they dismounted their horses. The beasts were well trained and somewhat accustomed to the eccentricities of being handled by sorcerers. This included, among other indignities, grown men crawling around underfoot, fiddling with their horseshoes and making them tingle. Each shoe had to be touched individually, and ether drawn and deposited within. It was not difficult work, and most children from homes where magic was common learned to draw ether for their very favorite toys from a young age. But in the case of horseshoes, it was dirty and unpleasant work, at least for those who preferred feasts and courtly sitting rooms to stables and the road. Phelan was nimbler afoot, and crawling around as well, than his portly associate. He took care of his own mount, then attended to Warlock Iridan's and Juliana's horses, all before Ruglor could finish his own and Brannis's. Ruglor grunted eloquently as he drew himself up to his feet after completing his job on Brannis's mount.
"I would bed the lad myself if it got me out of such work," Ruglor muttered under his breath, just loud enough for Brannis to be the only one to hear him.
Brannis managed to keep his chuckle inaudible as he smiled in response. His back was to the others, and the exchange went unnoticed. Once they were all in saddle again, Brannis urged his horse to a trot along the road. He immediately noticed the effect of the shoes, as his horse's strides seemed longer, and the scenery began to move past at a gallop. After the first few steps, the noise of hoof on dirt vanished, and they rose a handspan above the road. Content that he was no longer leaving a trail of hoofprints, he veered left and headed off the road.
"Follow as soon as you clear the ground," Brannis called back.
The others took off after him, following down the road until their own mounts managed to get ever so slightly airborne, then heading westerly after the Grand Marshal. The journey quickened once they were all together and aloft. Their passage was eerily quiet, with the sensation of riding normally being accompanied by the crash of hoofbeats, and theirs marked by little more than the rush of air as they passed. Brannis had it the worst, with the flutes and openings in his armor catching the wind and creating all manner of moans and whistles, while the wool and fur that covered the sorcerers allowed them to ride largely in peace. The monolithic pale gray of the snow clouds hid the sun entirely, and looked like it would persist long enough to obscure moon and stars alike come nightfall. Brannis knew the area well enough for the time being, but he feared that they might get turned off course if they did not find better weather by the morrow. At the rate the horses were tearing across the Cadran landscape, they would be into the heart of farm country by midday the next day. It was unfamiliar land to Brannis, too far within the Empire's borders for the army to bother with garrisons, and too bland to be considered worthy of visiting for recreation or study. Neither the academy nor the knighthood had ever shown interest in sending him there. They kept the pace until shortly after what they imagined to be high sun, when Brannis bid them stop for lunch. He watched as the sorcerers dismounted to see how the morning's ride had treated them. Iridan looked stiff and walked awkwardly for his first few steps after regaining his footing on solid ground. His feet were shoulder-length apart and appeared content to remain so until such time as his muscles uncramped. Ruglor had fared somewhat better, though he had trouble mounting and dismounting the horse as a matter of course, due to his girth. He seemed as if he had made use of one before, and after a brief stretch to work out the kinks in a back ill-treated by the jarring of his ride, appeared to be none the worse for the morning's exercise. Phelan was in a worse state than Iridan, even. He needed assistance to get down, and was hardly able to walk without leaning on Ruglor's stout shoulder. Juliana appeared fine. She dismounted casually and showed no ill effects from the first leg of their trek. Brannis had once before underestimated her ability with horses, so he kept a tight rein on his surprise and settled instead for being rather impressed. The Archon family had large holdings in the countryside surrounding Cadrus, with ample room for horseback riding where no one would bother you. But it was still a pastime more common among the less gifted members of the family, and those high-ranking servants who could afford the luxury in both time and expense to indulge in equestrian hobbies. Though he had intentionally not kept abreast of her activities, he had always gotten the impression that Juliana was more at home at court and in the city than out in the country, riding. "Let us have our midday meal on the ground rather than in the saddle. I know you fellows are unaccustomed to riding, so we will have an easy day of it today," Brannis said, rummaging in his saddlebags for what was essentially going to be a picnic. "I can ride from the palace to the academy and back just fine. This overland travel's a bit much. I prefer a quieter pace for long times in the saddle," Iridan said as he began boiling away fresh fallen snow to clear a spot for their meal.
"Ah, better to make it quick, I say," Ruglor said. "Certainly there is unpleasantness to go along with any long journey. But if it must be done, get it over with rather than prolong it. Warlock Roshan said we could take another whole day off our trip if we press hard."
"Oh, yes. You all look so refreshed after our morning's ride that we ought to consider challenging ourselves a bit more," Juliana deadpanned, drawing a chuckle from Brannis.
"We still might reclaim that day, if I think we can manage it," Brannis said. "But we must be careful of the horses. If we tire them out, we shall not only be searching out fresh ones, but they will be unaccustomed to meddling by sorcerers, and we would have to have them reshod as well. A good smith can make quick work of reshoeing, but 10 horses? That would be much of a day's work, even if the new horses do not panic when the ruined shoes begin their work."
"Just 5 horses, you mean? We would not have to wait for these 5 to be reshod, certainly. We could just leave them with the stable and instructions to have them return to the palace stables," Phelan said, easing himself down to the now parched spot in the ground that Iridan had just baked.
"Where do you think they will get those shoes? We may not need to wait for these to be reshod, but the smith would at least have to make the time to remove the ruined shoes from our horses first," Brannis said. Brannis laid out a small spread of various salted meats and cheeses for their meal, and everyone partook, though Juliana and Phelan seemed skeptical, and Ruglor seemed to be expecting there to be a bit more. Iridan had grown accustomed to the meager field rations they had been eating in Kelvi, and he and Brannis knew that the trail food
the palace had stocked in their saddlebags was a world better quality than the hardtack and stale bread they had made do with in the forest.
So what is our plan once we get to Rainsdark, Brannis? Juliana asked once they had settled in for their meal.
She tore into a strip of jerky as she awaited his reply.
The true plan is to get there quickly, Brannis said. I have no doubt the goblins are already a step ahead of us in planning the siege. I will need to figure out as quickly as possible what they are planning to surprise us with, and then find a way to counter it.
Well, that is just what Rashan said at dinner last night. What's the real plan? Juliana countered. Surely there was more to it than that.
Not as such, no.
You mean that we are trekking across half the Empire and crossing the cloud wall at whatever spot we find ourselves at, just to figure it out when you get there?
Juliana seemed baffled.
You have a better plan? Brannis asked. If you know what the goblins have planned and a strategy to counter it, I am your attentive servant.
Brannis looked at her expectantly, with a carefully crafted expression of naive hopefulness painted on his face. He winced in his head as he recalled having used this same annoying ploy on her countless times when he was courting her, when he was just a boy, really. It had become an almost reflexive response to her judgmental outbursts. If he had realized how much more ridiculous that expression looked when wearing golden quicksilver armor, with a demon-horned helm, he would have flushed with embarrassment.
No, but if it had been my duty to put one together, I would have come up with something better than, I shall figure it out later.
Juliana imitated Brannis in a fair approximation of his voice. Phelan snickered.
Truly, if any of you have a plan, I am willing to listen, Brannis said. I cannot promise I will follow any set course of action until we arrive at Rainsdark, and I can assess the situation. But I will give fair hearing to any thoughts you might have. It is a long road yet, and I expect you will have plenty of time alone with your thoughts as the wind carries our words off as we ride.
Actually, Brannis, it is just you, Iridan said. The rest of us realized that it was that silly armor of yours making all the noise, and that once we hung back a few paces, we could carry on conversation rather easily. In fact, I won 150 lions for having best guessed when you would finally let us stop for a rest.
Brannis stowed his helm for the remainder of the day's ride, and was able to partake in the general conversation as their horses blazed a trail over the snow, at a blurring pace, despite pushing the pace hardly at all. As there were only so many practicalities to discuss and hours aplenty to fill, they spoke of many other topics. Brannis felt better about taking men into a war with him if they were less than strangers to one another. They rode five abreast, with Brannis at the center. They spoke of their backgrounds and families, though Brannis's, and now Iridan's, family was already the subject of much gossip in the Empire, and of what they thought of the future of the Empire now that the ruse of the false emperor had been revealed. It was then that Brannis found out why Ruglor and Phelan had been chosen to volunteer for this assignment.
Indeed, he gave us a choice, but it was Rashan's bargain come to life, Ruglor said,
laughing despite not finding it particularly funny himself.
You know it is a trap from the outset, yet you are desperate enough that you have to take the chance that it is not. It was suggested that Phelan and I might begin to help make amends for our part in perpetuating the ruse, if we were to go along and help defend Rainsdark.
So you both knew? Brannis asked.
Of course, Ruglor replied. I helped to craft and maintain the ether construct of the body. It truly is a masterwork. I cannot claim credit for much of it. I was one of several involved in the crafting. I would also occasionally repair bits where the construct started to fray.
What of you, Phelan? What was your role? Brannis asked.
I was an occasional puppeteer. I also consulted on matters of fashion and details of the face and jewelry, Phelan said. Aye, and he had quite the eye for it, Ruglor said. Illusion is his specialty, and not many of them are to be had among the circle. Our Phelan is an artist of ether.
So you are telling me that you two are being sent along as punishment? Brennus asked.
Not as such.
Rugler parroted Brennus's own equivocation back at him.
It was just strongly implied that it might forestall some potential future repercussions that might befall us.
So he threatened you, Brennus stated. It was not a question.
It was a privilege to watch a master at work, Rugler announced,
employing grace about the situation, when bitterness might have been forgivable. And what threat hangs over your head, Juliana? How did the old warlock convince you to come along? Brennus asked.
He asked. If you must attach a threat to it, then the threat of never seeing my future husband again should the battle go badly, she replied, as if there were no more to it than that.
Brennus had suspicions otherwise, but kept them to himself.
And you, Iridan? I do not suppose you required much to get you to come along, Brennus suggested.
Of course not. Rashan thinks I have it in me to become a warlock. He gave me some insights into how I should conduct myself on the battlefield, and I mean to put them into practice. If there is a chance I could be the Empire's next warlock, I have to try. High sorcerers get portraits painted and busts carved and names written into the history books. Warlocks make the history, Iridan said. Apparently, he had overcome the initial shock of Rashan's suggestion that he might become a warlock and had embraced the idea. Brennus could not help but wonder if he was paying attention when Rashan explained what had become of the other sons he had tried training as warlocks. By evening, they found themselves too far from any inhabited land to find proper beds for the night. The roads in the western half of the empire, between the capital and the cloud wall, were a tangle of mule paths, old trade routes, and north-south routes that funneled goods to and from the southern ports. Too few roads ran cleanly east-west for Brennus's company to make good use as a guide, and they got themselves stuck somewhere in between Farfield and Marmot. Smaller communities, to be sure, but plenty large enough to find five beds at the command of the Inner Circle and the commander of the Imperial Army. Instead, they found themselves saddled with sleepy horses, who bore increasingly sleepy riders, with no roof to be had close enough at hand to be of use. Brennus found them shelter near the Stoneflow River, where the steep bank was set back away from the low waters with enough room for a proper campsite. The bank was high enough that it shielded even the horses from the worst of the frosty night winds. Brennus saw to the horses after the others had all dismounted in various states of physical distress. He found a root from a tree along the bank where it had grown out through the surface and used it to tether the horses. He set about unpacking the small, individual-sized tents that each horse carried and turned to suggest someone start looking for firewood. He realized his folly immediately when he saw the sorcerers he traveled with. They had already levitated dozens of medium-sized stones from the riverbed to form a circle around the campfire, which they had already lit. The fire was large enough to warm a feasting hall and crackled merrily away, burning absolutely nothing. I spent too much of the day remembering that I traveled with a bunch of soft, complaining, useless fops, and forgot that I was traveling with sorcerers. I may as well have asked a town crier what news as asked sorcerers for fire.
The tent setting went similarly. While Brennus had initially resolved himself that he was not going to put up Juliana's tent for her, let Iridan be chivalrous if she needed the help, the four sorcerers each managed their own in no time at all, using telekinesis to arrange the little poles and ropes and jammed the stakes into the cold, hard ground. As Brennus went about setting his own up the more traditional way, he felt it pulled from his grasp.
"Sorry, Sir Brennus, I just could not watch that any longer," Ruglor said,
avoiding Brennus's gaze as he set it up for the Grand Marshal in one-tenth the time it would have taken Brennus by manual labor. They took their evening meal hot. It was little different from the midday meal, except they were able to add bread and melt the cheese onto it, making the two hard foodstuffs each more palatable. There was also wine to be had,
Brannis truly wondered if the palace stewards had any idea how to properly pack for the road. And there was a small, somber celebration of the fact they made it through their first day on the road. Upon retiring to their respective tents for the evening, Brannis could not help but notice that Juliana, at some point, had managed to set hers up right next to his own. He was too tired to do anything about it that night, but resolved that he would choose his tent site last at the next place they stopped for the night. It was just one further thing he wished he did not have to worry about. But he was hardly eager to get between Iridan and Juliana.